31 years ago this month, a little redheaded mermaid swam into our hearts for the first time and quickly became a part of our world. This month on the Mermaid Movie Club, we're celebrating her legacy. I'm Mermaids Andrea, and this is a special edition media deep dive on Ariel from Disney's The Little Mermaid. Greetings and salutations. Welcome to a very special edition of the Mermaid Movie Club, a celebration of Merfolk and media. As you could probably tell, hopefully you could tell, this is a podcast about mermaid movies and their representation in media and their common conventions. But today's episode, this little surprise episode, like I said, it's incredibly special. Y'all been waiting for it with bated breath, I know. I teased it maybe since the beginning of the podcast, and we're beginning a full month long, maybe a month and a half long. It looks like it's going to be that. But it's a series long discussion, mini series long discussion on Disney's The Little Mermaid. And we're kicking that off with a bit of a teaser, an appetizer, a hors d'oeuvre to our Little Mermaid celebration. This November, we celebrate, celebrate 31 years since Ariel debuted in 1989 and has appeared in various iterations ever since. I'm not talking about the endless adaptations of the classic Little Mermaid story, because there's a lot of those, and maybe at some point I could get into those as well. But Disney has found other worlds to make Ariel a part of beyond her own, and today we're going to take a look at all of them. Most of them. I think if I did all of them, then we would be here for a very long time. 31 years, that's a long time and a lot of things for Ariel to be in. So I'm going to cover about as much as I can. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff like movies, TV shows, books, comics, stage, video games, even manga. Get that. I'll only be including official appearances from Ariel in official Disney media. So no, I don't care about that redheaded mermaid that washed up at the beginning of Shrek 2 that was totally supposed to be Ariel. She doesn't count. Sorry. And I'm not including things like Disney park parades, because there's, again, a lot of those and she's in a lot of them. An evolution of Ariel in Disney parks might be something for the future, but not here. I am going to touch a bit on some of the shows she's in Disney parks, but I'm not going to go too much into the parades, because again, parades are a different thing, different beast. I'm also not going to talk at length about things like toys and dolls, because we would be here all day. I think I briefly mentioned a McDonald's Happy Meal tie-in pretty early on, but that's about it. So let's begin right there. 1989. Disney's The Little Mermaid arrives in theaters November 13th of that year. Disney originally toyed with the idea of adapting the classic tale in the 1930s, right around the time Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs came out, only for the idea to be dusted off 50 years later by Ron Clements and John Musker. As some Disney heads are probably aware, Disney was desperate for The Little Mermaid to be a hit. It had come off a few years of comparative commercial flops, such as The Black Cauldron and Oliver and Company. During this time, Disney's biggest competitor was Don Bluth, whose Land Before Time eclipsed Oliver and Company at the box office in 1988. It was quite literally sink or swim for Disney at this point, and all riding on Ariel, because if this didn't go well, Disney would have to shutter its animation department. There's more on this in the documentary, it's called Treasures Untold. If you have the Platinum Edition DVD of Little Mermaid, then you can watch it. Actually, I think it's on Disney Plus now. So if you go to The Little Mermaid on Disney Plus, and under the, I think it's the Extras tab, it's there. So if you don't have the Platinum Edition DVD or of The Little Mermaid, then you can watch it on Disney Plus if you have a Disney Plus subscription, and it's also on YouTube. I should probably link that, but I'm going to link it when I do the full Little Mermaid episode as well. But can you imagine? They were going to shutter the animation department. Can you imagine a world without timeless animated Disney classics? What would Disney have to be able to rehash 20 years after its release as a live-action remake? They'd have nothing. So, Little Mermaid shatters expectations, puts Disney animation back on the map, and kicks off what we know now as the Disney Renaissance. It goes on to win an Academy Award in 1990 for Best Original Song for Under the Sea and Best Original Score, shouts to Alan Menken, and shouts to Howard Ashman, who wrote the lyrics Under the Sea. Alan Menken, obviously the composer, I'm sure you guys know that. On November 14th, 1997, it enjoys a second theatrical run, delighting a new generation of children who weren't even born when the movie originally came out. This is a self-call-out. I was born a year after the movie came out, so The first spinoff of the film was going to be a TV series called Little Mermaid's Island, a TV series developed by Jim Henson's Henson Workshop. In this show, Ariel, played by Marietta de Prima, interacted with puppets of the film's animal characters, including new ones, such as Sandy, Flounder's twin sister, just a pink recolor flounder, if I'm honest, and Scales the Dragon. Now, Henson himself didn't actually work on the pilot, and he was supposedly not pleased with it. Of course, Jim Henson passed away 2 months after the pilot was filmed, which had to have had some impact on the show's development. 2 episodes of this exist in total, which can all be found on YouTube. One is called Sebastian's Birthday, and the other is called Tell the Truth. The characters of Sandy and Scales would later resurface in a series of children's books called The Little Mermaid's Treasure Chest that ran around the same time. I remember you had to order that by mail, and you got like a big box, like a big treasure chest of books. It was like a cardboard, like not laminated, you know what I mean? It's got like that glossy finish, and you had a few books in there. And I don't think I had all of them, but I remember there were some really specific ones. There was one like with a painting contest. There was one where Ariel was a queen. I remember those really vividly. And I don't think we kept them in the, I don't think we kept them in the chest. I think we kept them in like this plastic crate, which was sacrilegious. It was sacrilegious. But we did. That was just what we did. And those ran from 1990 to 1992 and are understandably way, way out of print. But I'm sure if you do some digging on the internet, you'll find them. Or they might even pop up in thrift stores. I think I've seen at least one in a thrift store once. And, you know, I do a lot of thrift shopping. So that's one thing Ariel and I have in common. We like looking for garbage in thrift stores. I look in thrift stores. Are there thrift stores under the sea? I haven't seen one yet. Let's move ahead. 1992. The year is 1992 now. And Ariel is out to conquer multiple worlds this year. Multiple worlds. I'm back on my John Mulaney crab. I'm sorry. In January, Disney World's newest Florida park, Disney MGM Studios, now known as Disney's Hollywood Studios, debuts its new stage production, Voyage of the Little Mermaid, as a replacement to its previous show, Here Come the Muppets. Today, it is one of the oldest attractions at the park. This show takes you on a 15-minute musical journey through the film using puppets, blacklights, lasers, hello, and projections. And honestly, it cuts out most of the film. It's like I said, it's a 15-minute, like, Little Mermaid abridged version. And the people who have been to it, like, I think unless you're a fan of The Little Mermaid, people don't really like it. Like, because you can tell that it's dated. It still uses, like, black light. It's definitely a product of its time. I still think it's very charming. The puppetry especially, I think, is very charming. And, don't take my word for this. I've heard rumors in recent years that Disney wants to close Voyage, and I could see why people would think that. For one, when this attraction opened, it accompanied the Magic of Disney Animation, which was a tour through the history of Disney animation, including storyboards, backgrounds, maquettes, and even a few Emmy and Academy Awards, if my memory's correct. I've been through that building before they've changed it. Fun fact, in that building, there was some ink and paint done for Little Mermaid, the Mer you know. But that building, as of 2015, has since been transformed into Star Wars Launch Bay, sitting right in between the current Mermaid show and, last I checked, it was a Disney Junior character experience. I don't know what it is now, if the Disney Junior character experience is still there. I understand there aren't a lot of character experiences going on right now, so there's that. Of course, as the park puts more emphasis on its Star Wars attractions, with Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opening a year or two ago, we're also factoring in more of the dated aspects and aesthetics of Voyage, even using the film's original 1989 logo in the opening sequences. But I like that. But it's easy to think, yeah, this one's on the chopping block. It's aged. But the attraction has stood despite everything, and call me shellfish, but I hope it never goes away. Maybe you could use a teeny bit of updating. Just a teeny bit. Another fun fact about Voyage before I move on. One of my earliest memories is being in that theater. I had to have been like, I would maybe like 2. I'm going to have to ask my mom because she might remember this more than I do. My sister and I were like probably about 2 years old because the attraction opened in 92. So we had to have been about 2 or 3. And I remember the earliest memory I have is seeing Ursula's face projected in lasers on the ceiling. And for years, it was ingrained in my mind. Like, I had no idea where I'd seen that. I was like, it was just in the back of my mind. Like, where have I seen this? And it wasn't until I went back in 2005 with my family, I saw the Ursula faces in the ceiling again. I was like, oh, that's where I saw that. I knew I didn't dream that. So yeah, that's when everything clicked. I don't know what everything is, but it clicked. Let's move on. September of that year, we see the debut of The Little Mermaid, the animated series. This, of course, comes to us in a time where Disney television animation is white hot. Cartoons such as DuckTales, Chippendale Rescue Rangers, and Tailspin had already enjoyed massive success, so there was no reason for Disney not to use the medium to expand on the universe of one of its existing film franchises. Of course, later on they would do this for Aladdin, The Lion King, Lilo and Stitch, Hercules, Tarzan, all the way up to the more recent Tangled and Big Hero 6 series. So it looks like this is working. The series runs from September of 1992 to 1994, as a sort of prequel to the 1989 film, sitting it somewhere between it and the 2008 direct-to-video prequel film, which I'll get to in a minute. Much like Little Mermaid's Island and the Treasure Chest books, the series introduces unique characters that never appear in the cinematic canon, such as Spot the Whale, the orphan merman Urchin, deaf mermaid Gabriella and her interpreter Octopus Ollie, and voice acting icons, Tim Curry and Mark Hamill, making turns, respectively, as the villainous Manta and the actual Hans Christian Andersen. Imagine that. The series ran on CBS for its entire original run and would rerun on and off between Disney Channel, Toon Disney, now Disney XD, and Disney Junior up until 2014. Of course, if you've never seen it or are nostalgic for it, then it is also, like I was talking about Treasures Untold, that's on Disney Plus. This is also on Disney Plus. I really vividly remember a storyline where like Triton is magically de-aged or something. And then I also really vividly remember the episodes with Gabriella. I think she appears twice. If you're a fan of Ariel and have somehow not seen this, maybe it was before your time or you didn't have access to it as a child. Like I said, it's on Disney Plus, or you can buy it on Prime Video, iTunes, Google Play, you know, the usual suspects. One thing I have to point out about it, the few times that I've seen it, there are some inconsistencies. I think like, I want to say at some point, like Ariel does meet Ursula in this show, but it, like in the movie, obviously it's as though they've never met. But Ursula is a huge part of the series. I don't remember if Ariel and Ursula met in the show. You know what I mean? So it's weird. I don't know. And then there's some inconsistencies with the design of the sisters. I want to say it's Adela that looks really different for some reason. So I don't know. It's definitely an interesting watch though. So around this time, Marvel Comics publishes a series of Little Mermaid comic books that seem to fit well within the universe of the animated series. This ran from July of 1994 to June of 1995. So it's like a nearly year-long run. 12 issues released over a 12-month period. So before you ask, no, this did not tie in with any existing Marvel properties at the time. And no, I'm pretty sure Disney isn't considering a Little Mermaid Spider-Man tie-in anytime soon. Or are they? But the last thing we need to do right now is give Disney Marvel any new ideas. And I say that as a Marvel stan. There were a few other comic adaptations starring Ariel leading up to this one, including a 4-part limited series comic written by Peter David and a Sebastian miniseries, also by Peter David. That's not to be confused with the more recent Little Mermaid comic released last year through Dark Horse Comics, which is written by Cecil Castellucci with art by Zulima Scotto-Lavina and coloring by Picky Hamilton. I hope I got those names right. I'm so sorry if I got your names wrong. That one hews a bit closer to the film we all know and love. In fact, it's a lot closer, as it's essentially an adaptation of the adaptation that Disney released in 1989. That's when Inception is, right? That one you can still hopefully find wherever fine comics are sold. By the way, support your local comic shops. 1997 happens, and we get that theatrical release of the original movie, along with a general resurgence of The Little Mermaid in general. I believe there's a McDonald's Happy Meal tie-in here somewhere, but nothing really new happens until 2000. It just kind of gets weird from here, Merpeeps. Like, this is tied to a practice as old as time, true as it can be, where Disney often re-released their classic films to theaters. I just got a text message They released their classic films to theaters, primarily those that were in Moratorium or the Disney Vault. And if you want to know more about this, Yesterworld did an amazing, informative video about the history of Walt Disney Home Video that touches on this. And I will link that in the show notes because I've watched it a few times. It's so strange, like, how things transpired with, like, Disney and Universal at the time. And it was wild. Anyway, give that a watch. Let's move on. As part of that weird era of constant direct-to-video sequels in the early to mid-2000s, Disney takes it upon themselves to release The Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea, in 2000. Here we see Ariel as a mother, the only Disney princess to become so, the only human-ish Disney princess. Sorry, Nala. She becomes a mother to young Princess Melody, played by Tara Strong. Where Ariel wanted to become human and be part of the surface world, Melody is fascinated with an ocean she's forbidden to explore due to a past kidnapping attempt by Ursula's sister Morgana. You know, family stuff. The events of the film play out pretty similarly to the original movie, even if it might be kind of inverted. Instead of Ursula turning Ariel into a human, Morgana turns Melody into a mermaid and uses her to steal King Triton's trident. This, of course, wrangles the entire ocean, as well as Eric and Ariel, into a rescue mission. It wasn't a super well-received sequel, and Disney even tries to forget that they made it. But your DVD catalogs don't lie, and neither does past merchandise. Should have thought about that. For the record, I like the sequel. The songs may not have been as good, but to be fair, the bar was pretty high. Come on, guys, though. Let's be honest with ourselves. Melody turned out to be hashtag relatable, right? This is not a well-received sequel by any means. But not a lot of the Disney direct-to-DVD sequels were very well received. We're talking rehashed storylines, unceremonious retcons, and cheap money grabs, and less than stellar animation quality. In the case of Little Mermaid 2, it was dismissed by many as a cheap rehash of the original, with Melody essentially being a reverse Ariel. I'll get into this a little bit more in depth when we start talking about Little Mermaid 2 proper. That's supposed to be November 24th. I don't want to say too much about it right now because then I'm just going to drag this on. But I'm not going to leave y'all hanging. Not for too long. A year later, Disney debuts House of Mouse, which is a unique cartoon. It's called Disney's House of Mouse. It's a unique cartoon that holds all kinds of Disney's biggest stars under one roof, from Mickey to Snow White to Hercules, as they attend a nightclub run by Mickey Mouse and all his friends. The show debuts in January of 2001 on ABC's One Saturday Morning, illuminating television. If you know, you know. And it's moved to Toon Disney for the rest of its original run, ending in 2004. And it reruns on Toon Disney, now Disney XD, until 2009. So why did I bring this up? What is so important about this? Why is this important to Ariel? Well, like I said, you should have kind of picked it up when I said iconic Disney characters, because obviously Ariel is one of them. So that includes her. And she appears in a good couple of episodes, including Everybody Loves Mickey, Pluto vs. Figaro, and Suddenly Hades. She alternates between mermaid and human, depending on what works best for her, given the situation. 2001, Tokyo DisneySea opens its own Little Mermaid show, simply titled Under the Sea, at its Mermaid Lagoon Theater. The show recreates scenes from the movie with puppets, similar to the Voyage of the Little Mermaid show nearly a decade earlier at Walt Disney World in Florida, but with a more theater-in-the-round style, where Ariel, the aerial performer, actually, get this, you have to see videos of this to really, really understand how amazing this is. She hangs from the ceiling and flies around like a trapeze, right? Is that what that's called? Like she's a Cirque du Soleil performer. It's kind of amazing. Please look up YouTube videos of this because it's everything that the Walt Disney World show wishes it was. I love Voyage. I love Voyage with all my heart, but it wishes it were Under the Sea. It blows it out of the water, I would say. It's a mermaid pun. In the early 2000s, an unprecedented collaboration between Disney Interactive, may it rest in peace, and Final Fantasy Minds at Square, I think it was just called Square at the time, now it's called Square Enix, they give us Kingdom Hearts, a stunning story-driven title that combines Disney characters and worlds with Final Fantasy-style storytelling and gameplay. You play as the Keyblade wielder Sora, along with Donald, Goofy, and a who's who of Disney stars, and you must venture beyond the Destiny Islands, protect your friends, and defeat the oncoming darkness. And it really is far more convoluted than that, but explaining the Kingdom Hearts saga is a whole other video in itself, and anybody who's played it can vouch for me. It's a lot. Not even Kingdom Hearts players know what Kingdom Hearts is about. Source, I have a sister who plays Kingdom Hearts and has played Kingdom Hearts from the beginning. The story of Kingdom Hearts is told over numerous games available on PlayStation platforms, some Nintendo handhelds, PC, and mobile devices, not being ported to Xbox until 2019's Kingdom Hearts 3. In four of these titles, Ariel makes some kind of appearance. In the inaugural Kingdom Hearts title from 2002, Sora, Donald, and Goofy encounter Ariel as she tries to escape the Heartless. Our heroes explore Atlantica as a merman, octopus, and sea turtle, with Ariel joining as a party member. 2004's Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories touches on a lot of the same storylines, but with Sora having no memory of Ariel from the original game since his memories are kind of messed up, which my sister told me is a bit of a understatement. 2006's Kingdom Hearts 2 takes things in a more familiar movie-based direction, which takes on a musical-inspired gameplay style, one that fans of the game were very vocal about their dislike for. Whatever. Atlantica is honestly probably the most hated of all Kingdom Hearts stages, partly because its gameplay style changes drastically with every game, and also some people don't like Finny Fun, but whatever. It's worth noting that most of the original voice actors, including Jodie Benson and Pat Carroll, reprised their roles for these games. Ariel also briefly appears in the Kingdom Hearts manga, which began in 2005, and I believe you can get Little Mermaid medals and costumes in the mobile-based RPG Kingdom Hearts Unchained Key. That's a Greek letter key, FYI. There is one more appearance by Ariel in this franchise, and there's an upcoming one, and I'll get to that a little bit later on. For the record, speaking of video games, three Little Mermaid games were made prior to Ariel's appearance in Kingdom Hearts. Those included 1991's The Little Mermaid side-scroller from Capcom for NES and the Game Boy, 1992's Ariel the Little Mermaid from Blue Sky Software for the Sega Genesis, and 2000's The Little Mermaid 2 Pinball Frenzy by Left Field Productions for the Game Boy Color. Note, IP-based pinball handhelds are typically desperate cash grabs, much like Pokemon Pinball a year earlier. Disney clearly tried it. I guess Melody couldn't be saved after all. In 2005, the Japanese manga series Disney's Killala Princess begins publication. I almost said production. I guess it's the same thing. This is a manga series written by Rika Tanaka, and illustrated by Nao Kodaka, and published by Kodansha, originally in the monthly Nakayoshi magazine, where young Killala and the Prince Ray go on a quest to find the lost princess. Hint, it's obviously not Rapunzel, since it vastly predates Tangled, and save their kingdom. Throughout the series, they meet a selection of Disney princesses, including our own Ariel, who appears in the second volume of the series as a sort of supporting character. Now, it looks like Tokyopop had a license to Killala Princess that had expired, but had been reissuing the series since 2016. Look, if you ever wanted a shoujo manga, like a shoujo manga take on Disney princesses, this is it. Like, how did I not hear of this? How did I not hear of this during my high school anime phase? Where was this? I would have eaten this up. Like, I would have been all about this. In 2008, Disney releases its final weird experimental direct-to-video sequel, The Little Mermaid, Ariel's Beginning. It was more like a prequel, actually. This movie ties up some loose ends from the original movie, such as, number one, why does King Triton hate humans so much? And number two, where is Ariel's mother? Where is she in all this? Both of those questions are answered by a newly introduced character, Queen Athena, played by Lorelai Hill Butters, and oddly looking a lot like one specific daughter. So many questions. I'll save you the spoilers on Athena, but you can probably figure it out for yourself considering what seems to happen to Disney moms. Oops, I think I spoiled it. The movie plays out a lot like Footloose, with Triton banning music throughout Atlantica, but Ariel is adamant about bringing music back no matter what it takes. In this movie, we also meet the sister's resentful caretaker, Marina Del Rey, played by Sally Field, and her soft-spoken Winnie the Pooh-like manatee companion, Benjamin, played by Jeff Bennett. The nice thing about this movie for me is that it fleshes out more like the characters of the sisters. So Athena is an uptight oldest sister, Aquata is a gossip freak, Arista is a bit of an airhead, and also a bit of a kleptomaniac. See, I still want a spinoff based around the sisters. And honestly, Disney, instead of a live-action Little Mermaid, look, I'm totally stoked about this live-action Little Mermaid, and I want it, like, yesterday, but I still want more, like, development on the sisters. Like, give us that, too. I ask too much. I want more. Sorry. No, I'm not. That same year, Ariel makes her Broadway debut in the Little Mermaid musical. Finally. It took him, like, how long now? Broadway veteran Sierra Boggess, who's also best known as Christine in Phantom of the Opera and as well as a bunch of other great roles, she originates the role of everyone's favorite mermaid on Broadway alongside a massive cast and colorful stages that bring the movie to life. fun fact, also part of the original Broadway cast. I just find this fact so amusing. Also part of the Broadway cast is, as Sebastian, is actor Titus Burgess, who would later appear as Titus Andromedon on Netflix's Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, who could never score a role in The Lion King on Broadway. But he, in real life, he originated the role of Sebastian. So I just love when art imitates life like that. And also, like, real talk, I love his voice. Like, I love him as Sebastian. Like, the way he wails at the end to kiss the girl. Like, forget about it. Oh. 2011. We're getting closer to the present now. 2011, Walt Disney World opens its newly reconstructed Fantasyland in the Magic Kingdom, including new attractions based on Beauty and the Beast, Dumbo, Snow White, and of course, The Little Mermaid. More than 20 years after the release of The Little Mermaid in 1989, New Fantasyland, you gotta call it New Fantasyland, well actually, I don't think it's new anymore. New Fantasyland introduces Under the Sea, Journey of the Little Mermaid, a dark ride identical to the Disneyland ride of the same name. The short ride takes you through a traveling clamshell car through the events in the movie, from Ariel and her grotto, to Sebastian's under-the-sea soiree, to Ariel's fated deal with Ursula, and that awkward, 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 awkward kiss-the-girl moment, all the way up to the wedding of Ariel and Eric. It took nearly 25 years for Disney to construct a ride based around Little Mermaid. Like I said, Voyage was the first attraction that opened in 92, and there were shows in international parks, what have you. But let's look at it like this. The Little Mermaid opened in 1989 and didn't get a ride until 2011. Frozen opened in 2013 and had a ride of its own by 2016. I mean, it did take 91 years for Mickey to get its own ride, so I don't know where I'm going with this. Also, I gotta make note that whenever I go on Under the Sea Journey of the Little Mermaid, literally every time my clamshell breaks down in Kiss the Girl and, you know, Ariel's still moving around a bit and she always looks so awkward like, oh, the clamshells broke down again. They're all staring at me. Is this over yet? Like, it breaks down there every single time, either there or right before the Under the Sea part starts. Like, it's like without fail. And that's just my luck, I guess. In 2013, Ariel finds her way back to television in two different ways. The first of them is a special episode of Disney Junior's Sophia the First, titled The Floating Palace. In this episode of Every Kids Franchise Has a Mermaid Special, Sophia and her family go on vacation on a boat called The Floating Palace, where Sophia, voiced by another Ariel, Modern Family's Ariel Winter, saves and befriends a young mermaid named Una, who is voiced by Chilling Adventures of Sabrina's Kiernan Shipka. And so Sophia becomes a mermaid herself. Along the way, she gets lost, and her amulet summons Ariel, who gives her a song and a pep talk. Now, it's not the first time Sophia encounters a Disney princess. In fact, I think the only character she didn't meet out of the princess line was Pocahontas. And maybe that was because Pocahontas was actually, like, a person, but I guess that never stopped Disney before. Because the thing with Sophia is that, like, that amulet, I think, is supposed to summon princesses. I think that's the whole point of it. I don't know. I've only watched like a few episodes of it. So that's like the gist I get of it. The next time we see Ariel is the first time we see her in a live action setting outside of Disney parks and occasional late night parodies. Yes, Anna Kendrick, I see you. Yes, Tina Fey, I see you. We're not talking about parodies right now. Love y'all, but we're not talking about parodies right now. That's for another day, maybe. Ariel makes her first appearance on ABC's Once Upon a Time in its third season episode, aptly titled Ariel. Wow, I wonder who this is about. Her appearance was previously teased at San Diego Comic-Con in a teaser trailer. In this episode, Ariel, played by Joanna Garcia Swisher, actually plays savior to Jennifer Goodwin's Snow White in the fairy tale world, and in return, Snow White helps Ariel meet Prince Eric at a festival to the goddess Ursula. During this festival, the goddess Ursula grants all mermaids, all merfolk, the ability to walk on land for 12 hours, and it all kind of goes to shell from there, including a crazy battle between her, Snow White, and the evil queen Regina, played by Lana Parrilla, that involves Regina turning Snow into a mermaid. I won't tell you how it ends, because I stopped watching Once Upon a Time somewhere in season 4, as Disney's grasp on it seemed to get harder and more evident, more on that in a second, but the entire series is available for streaming, so just watch it for yourself. The series is on Netflix for a while, but naturally, now it calls Disney Plus its home. So if you ever wanted to watch it, there it is. 2016, we get a little book called Poor Unfortunate Soul, A Tale of the Sea Witch by Serena Valentino. It is part of a series of books that tells the villain's side of a particular story, such as Maleficent and Mistress of All Evil, The Evil Queen and Fairest of Them All, and Mother Gothel and Mother Knows Best. Obviously, it centers more around Ursula than anyone else, but given that it does surround the happenings of the original movie from 1989, obviously, Ariel's a big part of it too, and as such, appears numerous times. I did recently buy this for my Kindle app, so I actually have to get into it. I'm kind of a terrible procrastinator, but I'm excited to get into it. In 2018, Ariel returns to the big screen. Ariel appears alongside a full cast of Disney princesses in Disney's Ralph Breaks the Internet, the sequel to 2012's Wreck-It Ralph. Ralph and Vanellope explore the internet to find a crucial part to Vanellope's game, where, along the way, Vanellope finds herself at Oh My Disney, alongside the entire cast of Disney princesses. Yes, this time it includes Anna, Elsa, and Moana. And it gets extremely meta from there, singing, pajamas, important water. The later musical number by Vanellope and the Slaughter Race cast, A Place Called Slaughter Race, was not only written by Alan Menken, the composer behind the music of Little Mermaid, but there are also some parallels between the visuals of it and Part of Your World, at least that's what I saw. If you watch the movie, I think it's on Disney Plus now. If it's not on Disney Plus, it's on Hulu. Tell me what you think. Tell me if you saw the same things that I did. Or tell me what you saw, and I'll be like, okay, yeah, okay, I saw that. Also in 2018, Ariel appears in the book Part of Your World, A Twisted Tale by Liz Braswell. This is also part of a series of Disney villain books from Disney Press, which looks at their classic films had they ended a bit differently. They had previously given Aladdin, Snow White, Beauty and the Beast, and even Mulan this treatment, so why not make the Faustian tale of the Little Mermaid even more disturbing? In this story, Ariel runs Atlantica as queen, still without her voice, in the absence of her father, while Ursula has effectively taken over Prince Eric's kingdom. Ariel discovers that her father might still be alive and sets out on a dark quest that they just don't make Disney movies out of anymore. Because that sounds a little too original. So remember when I mentioned Kingdom Hearts earlier and when I said I'd get back to it? I'm doing that now. I'm doing it right now. The long-awaited Kingdom Hearts 3 finally comes out. It was like, well, let's see, Kingdom Hearts 2 was like 2004. It comes out in 2019. So that's, I'm not doing math right now. Kingdom Hearts 3 comes out and doesn't actually include Atlantica as a playable world. However, Ariel appears as a summon character. What that means, if you're not familiar with it or like Final Fantasy or anything of the sort, that means like she's something of an assist. So when you summon Ariel, she appears as a version of herself that's like made of water. It's like she's translucent, but you can still see it's Ariel. And she and Sora alternate diving through the battlefield and then later like do a thing together. It's very, very cute. And she joins a summon cast, including Wreck-It Ralph, Stitch, the Meow Wow from Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance, and Simba on fire. Simba is on fire and it is extremely cool. The Meow Wow is just extremely cute, but Simba's on fire. Anyway, so let's pull it up a little bit more recent. We're getting close. Now, for a few years, rumors circulated about a live-action remake of The Little Mermaid, as it became a trend for Disney to release live-action remakes of its popular animated films, such as Cinderella, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin. The Lion King is not a live-action adaptation. Get over it. Naturally, The Little Mermaid had to fall in line there somewhere. When Disney announced its remake of the film, Rob Marshall was announced to direct, and Alan Menken would return to make new songs for the film alongside Hamilton scribe Lin-Manuel Miranda. Not only that, but Halle Bailey, one half of the Grammy-nominated, I think Grammy-winning, duo Chloe and Halle, would take the role of Ariel after Zendaya was rumored to be in talks for the role. Since then, more casting details have trickled out, and not a lot of things have been denied except for Harry Styles. Melissa McCarthy is Ursula, Jonah Howard King is Prince Eric, Awkwafina is Scuttle, Jacob Tremblay is Flounder. None of those have been denied so far. The only thing that was ever denied was Harry Styles as Eric. I think he was approached for it, and I think he turned it down. I think that was what happened. Now, Disney also hasn't come out and said, hey, this is who's going to be who, except for Ariel and Eric, I think. But the rest of the actors have mostly just been playing coy. Actually, no. I think Awkwafina and Melissa McCarthy inadvertently confirmed, like, yeah, we're doing it. Jacob Tremblay is the one who's like, I'm not saying anything. So just Disney, it's, you know what, never mind. It's a weird year. I don't blame you. Now, of course, they started production on that movie earlier in the year. I want to say like February, March of this year, they started production on that. But of course, the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic put a halt to a lot of stuff, a lot of films that were being worked on, a lot of TV shows that were being worked on, everything. It was everything, okay? It was everything. I will go ahead and assume that they're back on set now. I'm recording in November, with some restrictions, of course. There was a rumored release date of spring 2021. I fully expect that to move significantly. Even films that are ready have had to move back a few times. And as for movie theaters are opening up again at this point. So I'm hopeful that we'll have a normal theatrical release for this, provided that we continue, that we try to handle this like gracefully. Because in the United, I'm in the United States, obviously, we're not handling this gracefully. We're not. Not at the moment. But the rest of the world, other parts of the world are doing a really good job with this. So I don't know. This is why we can't have nice things. But that's neither here nor there. In the meantime, 2019 gives us The Little Mermaid Live, a live musical presentation celebrating the film's 30th anniversary. It airs on ABC in November of that year and stars Moana herself, Ali'i Gervalho as Ariel, in addition to Queen Latifah as Ursula, Graham Phillips as Eric, Shaggy as Sebastian, and John Stamos as Chef Louis, with a brief appearance at the beginning by Jodie Benson herself. The show is one half live performance, one half movie. I believe all the musical numbers were at least live. Maybe there's something I'm forgetting because I only watched this once. Part of Your World had some cool trapeze work, like the Tokyo Disneyland show I mentioned earlier. But as for the rest, it might be best for me to keep my personal opinions aside on this for now. But trust me, we will be coming back to this at some point. If you want to watch that, that is also on Disney Plus, I believe. Just assume everything Ariel's on Disney Plus at this point. Like, I think it all is, except for that Little Mermaid's Island, obviously, because that did not make it to air. and last but not least, I mentioned Kingdom Hearts, that there was one more Kingdom Hearts thing coming, and that's because it is most definitely coming. It is, I think, less than a week away from when I'm recording this. Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory arrives for the PlayStation 4 and the Nintendo Switch this November. We are in November, so that's there's that. I've played the demo of this, and I really like it. It is a rhythm game set to the music from the game by composer Yoko Shimomura, and it's some of my favorite like video game music ever, so I'm just going to put that out there. Like, the music in this game has made me cry. But the reason why it's important to this, I know this feels like an ad right now, I'm sorry. The reason why it's important to this is because it includes some of the numbers from Atlantica in Kingdom Hearts 2, and screen caps confirm this, in addition to having an Ariel party member like you would in Kingdom Hearts and Kingdom Hearts 2. Now, in the gameplay style is very interesting. You and your party fight enemies on a beat map to the song's rhythm, which sounds a lot like the movie Baby Driver, if you're familiar with that. And I like Baby Driver, so I'm into that. Like I said, it's out in a few days from when I'm recording this, but the demo is currently available for the PlayStation 4 and the Nintendo Switch. I am playing it on the Switch Lite. It holds up pretty well, and it's definitely not the kind of rhythm game I'm used to, because I mostly play Superstar SM Town, which is on my phone. But I thought I'd add, just to make this more relevant to the discussion, because again, right now it sounds a lot like an ad. I'm trying to make it not sound like an ad. I'm sorry. A lot of the world themes in Kingdom Hearts are basically just the songs from their movies. So Halloween Town comes to mind. I don't remember which game that's in, where that's the song in that world is basically This is Halloween. In Kingdom Hearts 3, when you play in the toy box, it's You've Got a Friend in Me. And I think Strange Things is also part of it. Or maybe I dreamed that. But they're obviously recreations of the music. They're not like they weren't taken from the film. So it's important to note then that even in Kingdom Hearts 2, all the musical sequences, because like I said, it's a musical, it's also kind of rhythm based in Kingdom Hearts 2. All the musical sequences, the songs are reused from, they're not reused, sorry. They're completely new re-recordings of the songs by Jodie Benson, Pat Carroll. I don't remember if Samuel E. Wright was the voice of Sebastian in Kingdom Hearts. I don't remember. I don't think he was. But they're completely new re-recordings. So I'm going to assume that those are also in the game. I know Under the Sea is in the game for a fact. But we will know more when it comes out next week. So I'm excited for that. But until then, that's where we close the timeline of Ariel through the years. Happy 31st to you, Ariel. You don't look a day over 16. There's dogs barking, sorry. Now, there's probably a lot I've missed, so if I left out something that you really loved, I sincerely apologize. There's a lot, and there's no way I could cover it all and have it not go on forever. As I said, this effectively begins a month and a half long celebration of all things Ariel right here on the Movie Club. Next up on deck will, of course, be our regular Mermaid Movie Club discussion of Disney's The Little Mermaid on November 10th, followed by The Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea on November 24th, and then in December we'll hit on Ariel's beginning as well. I'll give you enough time to prepare your dingle hoppers and snarf plats accordingly, because I know you have them. But until then, why don't we go out like this? Thanks for tuning in to the Mermaid Movie Club for this special edition Ariel Media Deep Dive. Be sure to tune in on November 10th as we, officially, begin our series on Disney's The Little Mermaid. For more Mermaid Movie Club updates, visit the homepage at mermaidmovieclub.tumblr.com and follow me on social media. All my profiles are in the show notes. We've got new episodes every second and fourth Tuesday of every month, so be sure to subscribe on the app of your choice, tell all your mer friends about the show, and please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And you can also leave me a voice message on the Anchor app. Until then, this is the Mermaid's Andrea. Have an amazing day and a fantastic tomorrow. Why do I keep mushing together? I need to practice my diction or something.